Well, good afternoon. I am Ralph Noble, kind of somewhat speaking on behalf of the membership at North Carolina A&T State University. This is really a real good team effort there, something that we started on the movement of a trip back from Atlanta to North Carolina. I think our members felt so strong about this need that we actually started talking about it on the plane flight back, and we allowed us to hit the ground running. And just to give you an idea about our team membership, because I think the skills that they brought to the table was a key to how far we went with this program in this short time. Michelle Ely is an extension. She's a community organizer. Tracy Hannon is a veterinarian. David Jones, also an extension, was coordinated extension agents. Morgan Thompson was a student of ours in animal science. Keith Baldwin is a coordinator of natural resource programs. And Peter Collins was somebody from North Carolina State University's School of Veterinary Medicine. He's an epidemiologist. And so they are going to be keys to not only bringing the people to the audience to our presentations, but when we started to put together documents for them to have, it was put together by these specialists. We mentioned the purpose and I guess the approach with 18-9s were going to be a key part to this, and we found out more of what that meant. And I wanted this to bring a little light to what we call the 18-9s and land-grant institutions. Land-grant institutions, in this case, the 1890s, were established by the government, legislated in the second Morrill Act of 1890. Now, this is after they had one called the first Morrill Act, which started in 1862. And those schools were given land, 30,000 acres of land for every congressman that they had, except that didn't apply to the 1890s. Those schools were given enough money to have a number of experiment stations. So the 1890s were there basically with the mission of working in education, research, and service, service being thought of today as extension, but primarily working with minorities and low-wealth communities. They occupy about 17 states, about 18 universities, primarily serving what is called the Black Belt region of the southeastern part of the United States. It's an area of really about 11 states. I think it's about 635 counties. It's probably considered by the social scientists the largest persistently poor community in the United States in its history. And this is where these schools are located. They've been there for some while. The extension program started back, in fact, the first extension agent in this country was started when George Washington Carver asked Booker T. Washington at Tuskegee to hire T.M. Campbell to take information out to those farmers. And they started the farmers' conference there. And it's been going on for some 100 years. And so we see, if you look at the network of people here, they come from these communities, they reside in those communities, and they have a unique connection with them. They eat breakfast with them for lunch. They go to church to the same places. And so they're looked at as the person who says, when something's okay to go, they're going to show up in a different light. And it's the same community when you think about things like the syphilis study, they may question government. You see things like maybe the suit of the United States Farm Service Agencies. These are the same communities. So even though we may think as PhDs and as decision makers this is important for them, they may not really respond to your request unless they see some stamp of approval by who's visually presenting that proposal. And that's what I think was real nice about the proposal. Well, we call the one from North Carolina A&T the Friends Project. And it stood for forwarding reliable information on emerging and novel diseases. And our purpose, as was mentioned before, was to raise the awareness of how local communities on their own could prepare for and respond to emerging, and we focus on zoonotic disease threats. We mentioned zoonotic because that's where, when it comes to our small farmers, and in the case where we hear more about local marketing, we hear more about direct marketing, these are the individuals that are selling products directly to the consumer public. We wanted to engage key agency partners to help us address issues that affect both animal and human health and where they converge. And what we found out was that there's a really large network already in existence. And they are already spending millions of dollars already. But if you look at the demographics of who they've been bringing in, you don't see a lot of the ones that we thought we pulled into this group. So how did we approach this particular effect? Well, we thought we would go to extension agents. These were the ones in those communities. They would consider expertise in agriculture production, livestock production in this case. They were the ones that talk directly with, visit small-scale livestock producers. We looked at a number of activities, and we targeted really four counties in North Carolina. North Carolina has about 100 counties. Livestock production and that meat area is considered the biggest industry there. Those are billion-dollar businesses to those areas. We looked at four different counties. One county in particular, you get an impact of this need for the state. And when something goes wrong with these small farmers, it goes wrong with those meat industries and those associated dollars and incomes. The Robeson County, for example, with only about 50,000 residents in the county, they rank number one in turkey production in the United States. They have 10 million turkeys in that state there, that county. They ranked number one in hog production in the state, number four in the country. Again, 2.2 million animals in that county. So you can see where when issues happen at the farm level, how far that can spread. And you know what our infrastructure, the way it is in the United States, and I guess you can get a feeling from when they had that spinach outbreak in California, there was people sick in New Jersey. So our infrastructure, we moved things pretty quickly. So we thought we'd go to what we call ground zero, go right to where the farmers work with these animals and talk about a biosecurity plan. If they don't have a biosecurity plan, things will get out to the communities. But if we hit it off at that level, we can prevent it from getting to the communities. What else about these particular communities? They were racially diverse. Two counties have a non-white majority population. They had a moderate income household. Median household income in three counties lagged behind the state average of about $35,000. So our approach was to determine first what was the existing infrastructure in North Carolina that deals with animal health emergencies. I'll give you a list of those injuries in a minute. We tried to engage the agency partners and in this case discuss the MESH project and how we can be a part of the network of getting information out. And then we wanted to build the capacity of the extension staff to carry on this program long after the budget and the funding for this project has come to an end. We wanted to survey the farm families in North Carolina by getting an idea of what do they currently know about emerging infectious diseases, and how would they respond if there was an outbreak. So we did a survey first, looking at really two large meetings in North Carolina. We looked at the minority landowners meeting. We get about 250 people there. And we went and distributed a survey at the small farm conference in North Carolina A&T. We get about another 100 members there. And so that survey gives us an idea where were we going to start, what was the level of understanding, and then how will we go forward from here. And then from that material, we had the agents trained. We developed educational material to arm the agents and talking to the small farm communities. We attended the forums, but we were there mostly as resource people. But we felt that if the extension agent's face was the stamp of the presentation, more the presentation would be present. Another thing I think was important for the audience to show up is that we tried to piggyback off of the existing programs. I don't believe if we had said we're going to start with something on emerging infectious diseases, how many people show up. But we got on grower schools, we got on small farmer programs, and they were already coming for those programs. And then we just interceded a little bit and presented the material and got the buy-in from that level there. A number of partners, we thought, and this is the idea where North Carolina already has the system in place, but they didn't contact all the members of society, as we're going to say at this point. North Carolina Corporate Extension, both the program and the system here, North Carolina State University College of Veterinary Medicine, this is the epidemiologist, to understand that kind of material in this presentation. The North Carolina Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, Emergency Program Division, they were working with us. The North Carolina Division of Public Health, we went to the state offices in all these cases, the Public Health Preparedness and Response individuals, and they came to the forums with us. USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, Veterinary Service, they also sent a team member there. And then local feed dealers and health departments from those respective counties was also there, helped us put together the content of the presentations. And you'll see later on we did some hard copies and some more documents that we could lead agents with, that they could continue to have this program and education on it long after this project has come to an end. The existing infrastructure in North Carolina we thought was pretty established. I mentioned the Division of Public Health has a number of components. Department of Agriculture has a number of components. And then they have a state animal response team. And this also had every county, 100 counties, there was a person in every county part of an animal response team. And they're on 24-hour call. And if anybody called about any question about a disease, they would come visit that farm at no cost. And our farmers didn't really know about those situations, but there's money spent to have these people hired. The extension educators we thought were critical to position to educate the public about these problems and how they should know and how to be informed. And to help producers, we had some field days, implement practices for what we call biosecurity issues. They were not aware, and they gave us an idea from the survey why they didn't do these kind of things. The survey, I mentioned the farm families from those two major meetings in the state. We wanted to find out how small-scale livestock producers respond to emergency disease outbreaks. Where would they go for information? How they perceive it, is it really important to go look at emerging infectious diseases? And in the synopsis, I'm going to give a little more details on the next slide. This is what the producers said, in fact. Extension agents, by far, was the most reliable source of providing information on emerging animal diseases. Not the specialists. This is who they trusted. When it comes to more likelihood, they would go to find out if it's really real. Or did somebody identify a flying object? Again, they went to the county extension agent's office first. Not the veterinarian, not the state specialist. They went to the person that lives in their community. If they heard there was a local animal disease outbreak, they still would go to that farmer first. If there was a disease they weren't sure about, again, would go to that agent first. So a small majority of farmers, when we said if there was a disease outbreak, did you have a plan in place, a biosecurity plan, somewhere that you're going to say how you're going to limit the spread or the introduction of diseases? Very few of them had any kind of thing in place. And this is what the survey basically brought down. And we gave them a list of about 10 things, and they listed some other things in there. Extension agents, they mentioned 59% that there was a disease outbreak that would call them first. TB was there. NCDA was there. If they looked at if they're going to report a disease, if I see an animal disease, and sometimes small farmers, they have a lot of money, they would send them to eat those animals. They trade them among each other. And when they see it's going to die, they send them to eat it. And so there's a different perception of what we may see in this room. But again, the top response was, extension agent, is it a reportable disease? Should I be concerned about that food if I eat it? NCDA was second, and the veterinarian, who's the specialist, was third. Now, one thing we did decide is that they should be calling the veterinarian first. But that's not who they're comfortable with. So it's not about who they should be calling. Who are they comfortable calling? And we're going to try to help you solve that. The survey result, only 31% has any steps of a biosecurity plan. We asked them why you didn't have one. These two things were important to us. They didn't know how to do one, 47%, and they didn't have the money to do it. So again, Extension came in and says, we're going to provide this information free, and we're not going to charge you no cost. Solve that. What's another thing that came up? 10% were aware of the county emergency disease outbreak response plan. They didn't know it existed. And these people, some of them lived in their counties. But when they called the meetings, they didn't go to those meetings. Very important information from the thing. So Extension agents, we say it was our frontline resource. We have two agent trainings to really improve the education of the agents about emerging infectious diseases with those partners there presenting the material. We had the lecture on new and emerging infectious diseases, understand that, about the zoonotic diseases. We did a workshop dealing with animal health emergencies, what to notice, what steps you should take. We were trying to build the capacity of the agents and those counties to help the producers respond to emerging diseases. And so at the end, you'll see where we developed some educational materials that would be left in the hands of the agents that can be passed out to the producers that they can use, and they're using right now as we incorporate in terms of our daily programs within the state. So the county forms, after the survey, and it gives us an idea of what we should focus on, then we took it to the communities. And this is just an example of two forms where the agents are presenting. We're a member of the audience in terms of resource people, but we wanted the agents to present to the people in these small communities. And that's what you actually have there. So agents present information on emerging diseases, biosecurity practices, and the state emergency plans. And people from the county plans were there at the meetings as well. Participants included livestock producers, extension staff, agency partners, and I think what was different is also feed dealers. There's a caching project that's also working with Texas A&M and UC Davis. And they're using feed dealers as a way to contact us. So we were kind of unique. Now, it's not as widespread as the one here with Match, but their idea was farmers usually go to the feed dealers. So that's another way to contact. So we piggyback off of that group there, help us draw the group in, which was pretty good help for us. So this is, we gave each of the agents a hard copy of the presentations. Those are the dates. And they could take that out and put it back in. We did CDs with them, with the surveys. They can go do the surveys again. We only did four counties. There's 100 counties there. So they can go back and do these over and over again. The survey's on here. The presentation's on here. What else is on there? We presented a contact card. It's a dry eraser board. You can't tell. It's got an ink pen attached to it. Erase off. It's a place where you can go and put your veterinarian's phone number, your extension agent's phone number, NCDA, Department of Public Health, all their websites. And these are all county contacts. So they can go and just write it right on there and then stick it on we had it magnetized so you can stick it to the refrigerator. So without them going looking around for it, and if they didn't have time, maybe the children could look it up on the email, but find those numbers and actually having it freely to get to. We did a biosecurity fact sheet. Agents got those in boxes now, and they can get those out. It talks about what steps you go through to do a biosecurity. Some examples up here in the upper corner, you see some pictures of when you got people visiting from different farms. When you're taking your truck to the stockyard, where you have a convergence of disease issues, when people are coming from farm to farm, foot baths, what should go in the foot bath, disposable clothing, visitors come from the other places, international travels, we address that all. And this comes from specialists, but the agents were important to translate into a farmer-friendly dialogue. So this is farmer-friendly here. We gave it out to a few farmers. They told us to change some questions, how to respond. It wasn't what we thought we was asking. And this is the final product here. And then we had a biosecurity practice list we should have in a biosecurity plan. So this information was presented out to agents for presentations, and they get these all right now, distribution to their clientele, We had some actual hands-on demonstrations at field days and workshops where they can see a foot bath. They can see the material. And we also had part of our youth individuals from the youth programs and extension giving us out to FFA and 4-H. Because sometimes the young folks are better able to tell the adults it's a good idea. Because we do have some farmers that have some old practices. They've been doing it a long time. You know, some of them have been in the farm business longer than I've been alive. And I can't tell them much. But they may listen to those grandkids. And we want to approach them at that level. And so what we consider our lessons learned, the engaging low-wealth communities needs to be improved. We spend a lot of money, but we're not always contacting those particular communities. Efforts to engage rural communities should involve those who historically have been in those communities. In this case, 1890s for success. You should include cooperative extension agents, not just 1890s, but the cooperative extension agents in government training programs that the state, the federal, have ongoing training programs. They told us that of the groups that they can remember that don't come, extension agents was not there. And so now they've opened up to saying they're on their mailing list, and these are free for the agents. They now have the agents present in those training programs. So the government is very well trained in it. It's just the farmers don't know about it. Well, now we get the agents as part of that linkage between ongoing programs and what it just started, and thanks to the MATCH project here. And what's another thing we thought was important? There needs to be multiple training methods. There's no one way. There's no one method that treats all. And diverse information networks should be utilized to get the message across to these low minority and low-wealth communities. So our next steps, continue communication among the 1890s. I got AT&T up there. 1862s bring some resources to North Carolina State for us. Various government agencies, both at the national level, within our state and within the county level, and the local preparedness emergency plans they have in place. We need to seek, and we're doing that, as I talk among my friends here, funds to duplicate and expand the program, for sure in our state, to go beyond the four counties. And we've had a couple of regional-wide meetings. We've had students present at meetings, and sometimes the students even draw attention that as adults we couldn't get. And as a collective body from the 1890s, maybe through ARD, the southeastern part of the United States, we're going to continue to host workshops, field days, and demonstrations, but now they would include a component that talks about biosecurity plans. I thank you.